Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. When a good specialist journalist leaves the trade, that's usually cause for sorrow. But former New Zealand Herald technology writer Peter Griffin has gone on to a project that should be good for his peers. He's the manager of the new Science Media Centre, which aims to connect reporters with people who know stuff. I gave him a call to find out how he got involved.
Yeah, well, sort of what interested me, obviously, I was a technology reporter on the Herald, and, you know, I was sort of, towards the end, I did 8 years on the Herald, towards the end I was sort of getting bombarded by, you know, sort of companies and organisations trying to sort of pitch me stuff about technology and technology companies, but very little of it was sort of objective information, and I frankly was finding it pretty hard to separate the spin from the facts towards the end. There was just so much information, and so when I saw this sort of opportunity come up, an opportunity to build something that's an independent resource for journalists in an area as important as science, you know, I found it really, really exciting prospect. It's pretty sort of green fields thing. Nothing like this has really been done in New Zealand. There are science media centres in Australia and Britain, and we're taking some of the best parts of those organisations to apply to what we're doing here in New Zealand. But we'll also take the remit further than just focusing on day-to-day breaking news stuff. We want to actually try and this whole concept of open science, embrace it so that we improve the relationship between science and journalists in a number of facets, and that's going to include new media and even getting into journalism training schools in that as well.
Well, I presume actually as a tech journalist and familiar with the internet, you'd have a bias towards information being open and free anyway, wouldn't you?
Of course, yeah, exactly. And this, I've just been in Europe at a science communications conference, and this whole theory of open science where, and scientists are embracing it, where a lot of the journals and that are actually opening up access to the information, and scientists are endorsing this, and there's more transparency earlier in the process so that scientists don't just work on something and then deliver it to the world and expect the world to accept that they're actually communicating throughout the process.
Of course, that implies that you've still got to get editors and reporters to read those papers even if you make the information public, though, don't you?
Right. So what it boils down to, I guess, is making it easy for time-pressured journalists and editors to sort of digest the information. So, and what sort of one of the ways we'll do that is we will, if there's a big issue in science, or if there's some new research that comes out of one of the, you know, international journals like Nature or a local journal, we'll canvass opinion among five or six scientists locally and potentially internationally as well, present those views, basically quotes, on our website, and invite journalists to contact those scientists to flesh out their stories. So hopefully you'll get better sourced stories as a result, because journalists are getting these alerts. They know that there's several scientists that are able to comment and actually are willing to take a view on something.
Yeah, and I suppose the aim is that those stories that come off the wire aren't just run as they are. They're put in some sort of context.
Yeah, so there's a lot of science in New Zealand newspapers, but a lot of it's sort of fascinating stuff, you know. So it's stuff like putting a landing craft on Mars, or a story about the colossal squid. It's always going to be done quite well, and it's going to get a lot of coverage in the New Zealand press, but it's actually the stuff where we really need to get some local relevance on a big issue like climate change, which is where we can play a role by holding briefings where we get scientists and journalists in the same room. It's open and transparent, and everyone can ask questions of these people.
Yeah, and I suppose another issue is, and I've certainly found this, is finding scientists who are comfortable about standing up to a microphone or being in front of a camera.
Yeah, that's true, and I think that ultimately is going to be our biggest challenge, and you know, we're going to do everything we can to try and help them if it comes down to, you know, media training, teaching them to communicate risk and sound bites and things like that. Scientists are scared of that, and rightfully so. They don't want to be just made a fool of, and they're worried about the editing process and that type of thing. But it's not insurmountable, and I think especially if with new media, if you can encourage scientists to get involved where they have a bit of control, you know, start blogging, you know, and interacting with an intelligent community, because there are lots of people who want to read this stuff.
And I suppose on the other side, it would be nice if you could feel in 2-3 years' time if you'd actually improved the level of scientific understanding amongst working journalists too.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate. That's the long term. We've got 2 years of guaranteed funding in this project, and if in 2 years that is the ultimate outcome, you know, we'll have done our job. So it's hard to tell how it goes. There's been some really good progress made with the UK and the Australian centres. Those are bigger countries, and they're generally dealing with reporters who are specialists in science. There's literally only probably one or two full-time science reporters in New Zealand. Most of them are generalists or freelancers who cover science as part of something else. So the interaction, I think, is going to be slightly different with journalists in this country.
Yeah, I suppose the irony there being that you're a specialist tech journalist,
yeah,
print journalist, who's left the field, and there's a few of us. Do you worry about keeping specialists in print journalism?
Yeah, I think the industry is in a pretty moribund state at the moment. You know, sort of a lot of the journalists I'm talking to are actually looking to get out of journalism, and that's just, you know, they've been caught in the middle of this move to new media, the consolidation that we're seeing going on a major scale, and it's not a nice place to be at the moment. And while I think, and what I'm going to be telling journalism students is that if you're interested in science, start writing as a journalist student, because you're so much more valuable, you know, with some specialist knowledge as a reporter. But the trend is actually going the other way in this environment. They want people to be more generalist and to do multiple tasks with less resources.
So you're going to be doing that as well. You're going to be doing the grassroots stuff and going out and talking to journalism students as a matter of course.
Yeah, definitely. And on the other side of the fence, talking to early career scientists who might want to get involved in writing, because this whole field of science communications isn't really very well developed here, but it's absolutely massive overseas. It's become a discipline in itself, and there's a lot of scientists, I think, who have a passion to write, but they're sort of confined in this sort of academic frame of mind where they're not really encouraged to do it because they might make mistakes or be seen to be going beyond their sort of remit. But it doesn't all have to be high level stuff that could get them in trouble. There can be general debate and writing about this stuff, you know, especially on the web.
Yeah, actually, that's interesting you should say that, because coming back around to your original point about openness, I was talking to Richard Easter,
right,
who's a New Zealand cosmologist who works in the US, and he was saying increasingly, you know, peer review is still the gold standard, but
yeah,
people are now willing to put up draft papers online to blog about their work, to blog about other people's work. There's more of the debate happening in public now.
Yeah, that's right. And in Europe, I had a chat with Larry Sange, one of the founders of Wikipedia, who's now at Citizendium, his follow-up to that, and he's saying exactly the same thing. He sees things like wikis as a really good way for scientists to collaborate with some editorial input there, but to improve everyone's knowledge in the way that sort of Wikipedia has done on a much more mass market scale.
And of course, we should make clear that this thing isn't just for journalists and scientists. Everyone can go to your website, can't they?
That's right. Everyone's welcome to go along. And even if members of the public have a query, they're welcome to give us a call or email us through the website. But our focus is pretty much squarely on the media with this. We'll be working with scientists. But if we can help those general reporters who are under pressure and are being delivered a science story late in the day and have to turn it around in a few hours, you know, that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. Best of luck with it, Peter. I think it can only be a good thing.
Thanks, Russell. Appreciate it.
Peter Griffin there. You can find the Science Media Centre online at www.sciencemediacentre.co.nz. After the break, a political game from the people who brought you virtual rugby, and the Hollow Men hit the big screen.